This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
The actions from the brave band of activists from the Freedom Flotilla to break Israel's blockade of Gaza has resulted in worldwide condemnation of the blockade and the suffering it has caused. But what of the wider apartheid policies of the State of Israel toward the Palestinian people, both within Israel and in the occupied territories?
Drawing on his many years of directly challenging Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, Jeff Halper offers one of the most insightful analyses of the occupation you'll hear. Halper discusses how Israel cannot maintain its exclusive Jewish character without doing what it does, really, imposing on the country's Palestinian population policies of ethnic cleansing.
And occupation and discrimination expressed most graphically in its ongoing demolition of thousands of Palestinian homes, both inside Israel and the occupied territories. His voice cries out to be heard, as does the plight of the Palestinian people. Now, Jeff Halper, founder of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions.
Even within the Jewish community, there's movement on this issue. This issue is becoming a global issue. The Palestine issue is assuming the proportions of the anti-apartheid struggle. Since I'm the head of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions, we feel a special relationship to the Harlem Tenants Association and to other housing groups. Now, in Palestine, it isn't an issue of gentrification. It isn't an issue for economic reasons. This is an issue of displacement for political reasons. It has to do with the Israel-Palestine conflict. In 1947, the UN allocated Palestine, as the Palestinians call it, the land of Israel, as the Jews call it, this one country between the Mediterranean and the Jordan River. It's one land. And here there are two peoples that are fighting for control of the land. But it isn't a both sides thing, because they're very different. The Palestinians see themselves as the indigenous population. And in 1947, they were two-thirds of the population, and they owned 94% of the land. They were living in their country under a sort of a colonial rule, because the British had the country. At the same time, the Zionist movement was coming in, Jews coming in from Europe. And the asymmetry was that the Palestinians were living in their country and were able to absorb. If Jews wanted to come live there, fine. Palestine had Jewish communities, had Christian communities, had Muslim communities. Palestinian nationalism was never exclusive. The Zionist movement was. The Zionist movement basically came in until today and said, this is our country, the land of Israel. It is not Palestine. There is no such thing as a Palestinian people. And there is no other people that has any rights whatsoever to this country except us Jews. The conflict was not inevitable. What destroyed everything was this exclusive claim that the Zionist movement had. So the whole thrust of Israeli policy all these years has been, the word we use is to Judaize the country. Judaize Jerusalem, Judaize the Galilee. That means, of course, displacing Palestinians. In the war of 1948, Israel won and took half the land that had been given by the UN to the Palestinians. So by the end of the war, Israel is on 78% of the country, and the Palestinian land is reduced to 22%. The West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza. And then, of course, in 1967, in the Six-Day War, Israel took the occupied territories as well. So today, Israel controls the entire country. In 1948, in the war, Israel had a very deliberate and conscious and detailed plan of displacing the Palestinians, ethnic cleansing, driving the Palestinians out of the country. So half the population was driven out of the country, more than 700,000 people that have grown today. So there are 4 million today Palestinian refugees still living in camps and places around Palestine that are claiming a right to return. The first thing that Israel did was to destroy almost all the dwellings of these refugees. Not in the heat of battle, but after the people had left their villages, the Palestinians, Israel systematically destroyed more than 500 entire Palestinian villages. To take their land, by destroying their villages, then Israel prevents the refugees from coming back. But it was even deeper than that. It was an attempt to erase completely the Palestinian presence from the country. So on the individual basis, we're denying Palestinians homes so that they can't come back and they can't live there. On a collective basis, we're saying not only don't you have a right to a home anymore in this country, but you have no right to a homeland. By Judaizing the country, we destroyed their villages and urban neighborhoods, vast parts of the cities of Jerusalem and Jaffa and Akko and Ramleh and Tiberias and other Palestinian cities were destroyed. All the place names were Hebrewized. All the rivers, all the junctions, all the village areas, everything was made into Hebrew names. You're trying to erase completely the Palestinian presence. In this Israel, then, that emerged after 1948, you had only 150,000 Palestinians remained. Today, there are 1,300,000. Today, they make up 20% of the population of Israel itself. But the same thing happened in 1967. Israel came into the occupied territories and began to destroy housing. Since 1967, Israel's destroyed more than 24,000 Palestinian homes in the occupied territories. It does it through both military operations. For example, in the last invasion of Gaza, 4,000 Palestinian homes were destroyed. This had nothing whatsoever to do with the war. They weren't military targets. It was simply a form of collective punishment in order to break the will of the Palestinians to resist the Israeli occupation. Also, homes are demolished because Israel refuses to grant building permits to Palestinians. But that's not the end of the story. Now home demolitions has come back into Israel itself. The fact that you're a citizen of Israel, if you're not Jewish, if you're a Palestinian, doesn't mean very much. Israel tries to present itself as the only democracy in the Middle East, but in fact, it doesn't mean much. We call ourselves, in Hebrew, among ourselves, a Jewish democracy. So it doesn't mean very much if you're a non-Jewish citizen. There are today targeted about 40,000 homes of Israeli citizens, who are Arabs, of course, either Palestinians or Bedouins, inside Israel. So the house demolition policy, the ethnic cleansing, is not only done in the occupied territories, it's just as true inside Israel. Last year, the Israeli government demolished 3 times more houses inside Israel than it did in the occupied territories. 150,000 Israeli citizens living in villages that are not recognized by the government. They have no land claims. They get no water supplies, no roads, no schools, no electricity. And now their homes are being demolished. And where Israel is going is towards something like this. It can't drive out all the Palestinians. There are 4 million Palestinians living in the occupied territories that Israel's stuck with. Most of the people are there to stay. And therefore, Israel's headed towards apartheid. And we use that term precisely. Israel is trying to establish a Palestinian Bantustan on 15% of the country. And what's important to understand is that the Palestinians today are half the population of this country. Even after ethnic cleansing, if any refugees come back, there will be a Palestinian majority. And yet, Israel is working towards a kind of apartheid in which the Palestinian majority is locked into 15% of the country, and that truncated into 4 what we call cantons. The northern West Bank, in the center, in the south, and Gaza, and they lose Jerusalem completely. It's a Bantustan with inadequate land, with no water, with no borders with an Arab country for trade, no economy, not even a Jerusalem as a tourist resource. not even control of their airspace. They're locked into a cage. And in a way, it's worse. And this is what everybody from South Africa says that comes. It's worse than apartheid was. The Bantustans in South Africa were established as cheap labor reserves. The black Africans would come into South Africa to work as cheap labor and then go back. Here, the Palestinians have been locked out of the Israeli economy. Israel imports cheaper labor from China, from the Philippines, Thailand, Romania, West Africa. The Palestinians are locked into this 15%, this sterile land, with no access to the Israeli economy, and yet with no economy of their own. So they're really imprisoned in a worse way in some ways than the black African population of South Africa. And house demolitions, again, plays a huge role. And let me just take a couple minutes and walk you through a Palestinian family, the Shoamre family. Salim, Arabia, and their seven children. In the early 1990s, they wanted to have a home of their own. These are refugees from inside Israel in 1948. Their families come from inside Israel, so they're refugees that are now in the West Bank and want to build a home. They bought a small plot of land in the West Bank and applied to the Israeli authorities, because this is an occupation, for a building permit. Now, what Israel has done, it tries to present itself, again, as a democracy. So Israel has a policy of not granting building permits to Palestinians for the last 42 years. The last two generations, Palestinians have not been able to get building permits for new homes. How do you justify that discrimination? What Israel's done, it zoned the entire West Bank as agricultural land. So when a Palestinian who owns the property comes and asks for a building permit, the answer is, sorry, but this is agricultural land. Now, there's more than 150 Israeli settlements in the West Bank on the same land, often land expropriated from Palestinians, because we sit on the planning commissions. It's easy, if you want to rezone from agriculture to residential like that. So that the family applied for a building permit, they were told it's agricultural land. They applied actually three times. It was clear that they weren't going to give them a building permit, so that in the end, like thousands of other Palestinian families, the family had to build a small home for themselves illegally. And immediately they got a demolition order from what's called the civil administration. Now there are tens of thousands of demolition orders. Israel can't demolish all the houses. What it does is it randomizes demolitions. If you got a demolition order a year ago, and I got one last week, it doesn't mean that you're ahead of me in line. There's no pattern. There's no rhyme or reason. The family got the demolition order, but they lived in their home for 5 years before the demolition occurred. There are tens of thousands of demolition orders. So Palestinians gamble. Say, we'll build. Maybe they won't come for a year. Maybe they won't come for 5 years. Maybe they'll never come. But at the same time, even if you're living in your home, you're living in tremendous anxiety that they could come any moment. In fact, 5 years later, there was a knock on the door. And these are two officials of what we call the civil administration. It's very clever because Israel claims that there is no occupation. So to give a kind of a normal sense of proper administration, rather than having the army run, I mean, the army does run the occupied territories, but you have what's called the civil administration, where you hire civilians to do the administrative work instead of army, to give the impression that this is really just a normal civilian place. The question is, what kind of civilians? Because the civil administration is located in the middle of the West Bank. So these are settlers, two guys living on land taken from Palestinians in Israeli settlements. They're ideologically hostile to Palestinians. They're committed to the idea that Arabs, because we don't use the word Palestinian in Israel. To say Palestinian gives too much recognition and legitimacy to a collectivity. We talk about Arabs. They're ideologically committed to getting Arabs out of our country. And then they're put in positions to decide which Palestinians can have a home and who's going to be demolished. But of course, they're accompanied by soldiers. So there's a knock on the door. Salim answers the door, and Rami is there. Rami says to him, is this your house? Salim says, yes, it's my house. He says, no, it isn't. It's our house now. You got 15 minutes to get all your belongings out. We're going to demolish it. Now, what would you do? You would protest. You would yell. You would. When that happens, that's when the soldiers kick in, literally. Salim was beaten and thrown out of his house. This has nothing to do with security. Because the way Israel always presents things is that if I say Israel's demolishing Palestinian homes, the knee-jerk reaction is, well, they must be homes of terrorists. Salim's not a terrorist. There's no security element to this whatsoever. It's simply a policy against tens of thousands of Palestinian families, driving them off their lands. So that Salim was beaten and thrown out of the house. And in all the commotion, Arabiya, his wife, managed to slam the door shut and lock it with her and her kids inside. So the soldiers broke in the windows and threw tear gas into the house. Now, I don't know if you've ever had a whiff of tear gas outside, where it's pretty powerful. But inside the house, you can imagine. And then they broke in the doors. Arabiya was taken out unconscious. Her kids running and screaming. And you can imagine the trauma that these kids are going to have with them their entire lives. And then we come into play. We're activists from the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. Palestinians call us. We never know where a demolition is going to take place. When my phone rings at home before 8 o'clock in the morning, I know it's a house demolition. And we have an SMS network, and we get our activists out to the demolition. We chain ourselves in the homes. We get in front of the bulldozers. We try to resist, and we get arrested. But because we're Israeli Jews, we still have a privileged position. They're not going to shoot us. They're not going to beat us up. They'll detain us, but they're not going to put us in jail. So we're able to push the envelope to resist in ways that Palestinians can't. Finally, the family's out, we're out. So what the civil administration does is it subcontracts demolitions to commercial wrecking companies. The contractor then sends in foreign workers. Everything is torn out. You know how your kitchen cabinets are screwed onto the wall. You have a bedstand that's screwed onto the tables on the side, and everything is ripped out. Your papers are thrown out. Imagine your kids' toys, your pictures, I mean, everything you have in your home. And then the bulldozer comes to demolish the house. And here's a tragedy in a tragedy. The driver of the bulldozer is a Palestinian. He's just a guy that works for this company. So he comes one morning, and the boss says, you're going to go build a road. He comes the next morning, the boss says, you're going to go demolish houses. But, you know, this is a guy, an Arab, so jobs aren't plentiful with a bunch of kids. He doesn't have that luxury to go say no. And he knew Salim. They are friends. And yet he had to go out and demolish his own friend's house. And you can imagine what goes through the minds of Palestinians, just watching their homes being systematically demolished. For no reason. They're not terrorists. They're not building in a political way. They're not blocking a settlement. They're not blocking an Israeli highway. They're simply building modest homes for themselves in their own land. And the home is destroyed. So what we do as Israeli activists is we go out and raise money to rebuild homes that have been demolished. We've built 165 homes in the last 10 years as political acts of resistance. So we go out, Israelis, Palestinians, and Christian peacemaker teams. These are American Christians. They're based in Hebron. And they place themselves between the army and the Palestinians and the settlers to just get in the way and to witness what's going on. And they come and build with us as well, and other internationals. We rebuild homes as political acts of resistance. If we were doing this on a humanitarian basis, where we're the good guys coming in and helping these poor Palestinians get a house, they wouldn't cooperate with us. Because they're not the victims of an earthquake or something. They're the victims of a political policy. And they want the political issue to be up front. The houses are demolished for political reasons. So we keep that political focus up front. So if we built 165 houses out of 24,000 that have been demolished for humanitarian reasons, it would be meaningless. It's less than a drop in the bucket. But if you think of this as 165 acts of political resistance, of Israelis and Palestinians to the occupation, then it becomes much more meaningful. Here's a Palestinian woman who's scared, intimidated, traumatized, financially ruined, who's only seen Israelis as soldiers, to whom Israelis come and help her to rebuild her home. And it isn't only good for the Palestinians. For the Israelis, too, it's meaningful because it gives you something concrete to do in order to resist the occupation. We work with Palestinians, especially the Palestinian Land Defense Committee, and we rebuilt the home. But the night we poured the concrete on the roof, we slept over. 4:30 in the morning, the soldiers come back, and the home was demolished for the second time. So we decided we're not going to let the occupation win, and we're going to go out and rebuild the home for the second time. So we came out to rebuild the home. We got a small home up again. The family moved in, and again the civil administration came to demolish the home. Again, this whole thing repeats itself. We chained ourselves in the home. This time, workers from West Africa that came in, take all the furniture out. The bulldozer comes and demolish the home for the third time. A Caterpillar bulldozer. And they sent also a pneumatic drill in order to tear up the foundation so we couldn't rebuild the home again in the same place. Salim says that the demolition of a home is really the demolition of a family. I think that's kind of a phrase that could be used. It's the destruction of a family because human beings can't function without adequate housing. And for men, women, and children, it's a very different experience. For men, it's humiliating. I mean, your kids watch you getting pushed around, beaten up, thrown out, humiliated, which is a terrible thing. There's a Palestinian psychologist named Ayad Sarraj who did research, and he said that 60% of the kids who are suicide bombers have had their homes demolished and seen their parents humiliated. Not only that, but you can't protect your family, you can't provide shelter. It's a tremendously difficult thing for men. For women, it's a double tragedy. Because women like Arabia, their home is their whole domestic sphere. Their home defines them as people, as women, as mothers, as wives. And when they lose that, they get into a disorientation, a kind of a mourning. Arabia did not speak for 2 months after her home was demolished. And she still hasn't come back to what she was before. She's fragile emotionally. They have no way to function as women. It's hard to have your family in a tent. And then what happens? You end up moving into the base of another woman. You move in with your husband's family, your mother-in-law's house with 7 kids. Now everybody's crowded and packed together. And now you're in the space of another woman. The context is understood. They can't say no. But at the same time, you know, if I'm a woman, I need my own space. I don't have any authority in this other person's home. So the women begin to pressure the men. We have to get out of here. I can't function like this. And the men can't do anything. And for the kid, it's tremendously traumatized. Now, what we did for the family, when their house was demolished, and it became intolerable living with Salim's brother's family, so we helped them to rent an apartment in the very north of Jerusalem, which isn't very far from Ramallah. Now, during the Second Intifada, Israeli jets flew very close to their apartment building. Apache helicopters flew low overhead, shooting missiles at Ramallah. Tanks would rumble through the neighborhoods on their way to shooting, and sometimes in the neighborhoods, they shoot at Ramallah. I mean, we've never experienced those planes just over our heads. The noise is deafening. It shatters windows. It can destroy. It can do structural damage to buildings. And it terrifies people, especially kids. Imagine the shooting, the noise. And the kids were throwing up, couldn't stand on their feet. They're trembling. They're shaking. So Salim went over to them. And he said to them, "It's okay. It's okay. I'm here. I'll protect you." And Lena said to him, "You can't protect us. We saw what the soldiers did to you when they demolished our house. You can't protect us." So Salim says, imagine the feeling of a father when his own daughter doesn't believe that she can be protected in this kind of a situation. Wafa, their young daughter, during one of these attacks, went blind. And we took her to the hospital. Her sight came back. It was a kind of a hysterical blindness. And the doctor said her mind just shut down. So you can imagine the trauma a kid goes through, you know, for their mind to shut down and they go blind. And Muhammad, you know, the kids is bedwetting at night. I mean, there's all, you know, they can't concentrate in school. It's what we call clinically and dryly post-traumatic stress. But you see it in the entire society. So finally, we went out and rebuilt the home again. The home was demolished 4 times. And it was rebuilt each time by our volunteers. Finally, we got the home up for the 4th time. Now, the family can't live in the home. Because if they do, they'll lose the Jerusalem residency. But at any rate, the home is up. And we call it Beit Arabiya. It's in the name of Arabiya, the woman of the house. It has a mural on it. It shows a dead caterpillar bulldozer amongst a mound of dead armaments. You have Israeli, Palestinian, and international workers marching together under the red flag to show the solidarity of workers, that this conflict does not have to be. And hovering over the scene are the forms of 2 women. One of them, whose name you might know is Rachel Corrie, was a young American woman who was killed when she was defending a Palestinian home in Gaza, and she was run over 2 times by an Israeli bulldozer. And the other woman is a Palestinian woman named Nuha Swaydan, who was killed 2 weeks before Rachel in Gaza in her bed at night when the Israeli army demolished her home on top of her at night. The pregnant mother of 10 children. So those are the forms over the house. So we do our work, and I think that this obviously is not the kind of a phenomenon you have here in the United States, but nevertheless, the link connecting us all is this idea of housing and human rights and human dignity. And, you know, we're working in the name of poor people all over the world whose homes are destroyed or who are displaced for all kinds of reasons justified by government. And we have to speak for those people. So, thank you.
We've been talking with Jeff Halper, founder of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash.